Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Quad Shot, where we help you down and digest the day's most pertinent cancer news. It's July 6th, 2020. Welcome to the Quadcast. First up, lag time. Does the sequencing of short-course androgen deprivation therapy with radiation influence testosterone recovery and or biochemical recurrence? Well, those are questions that are being asked by this secondary analysis of a randomized trial as published in the Red Journal 2020 by Roy et al., where men received 2 months of androgen deprivation therapy with bicalutamide and gosarilin concurrent to radiation with 4 additional months of either neoadjuvant or adjuvant ADT. It took an average of 18 months after initiating ADT, or 12 months after completion of ADT, for complete testosterone recovery, defined as a value greater than or equal to 10.5 nanomoles per liter. At 6 months after finishing ADT, 20% of men had supercastrate testosterone recovery at a value greater than or equal to 1.7, with 90% of these being complete testosterone recovery. Most men experienced recovery between 6 to 12 months after finishing ADT, with a 70% rate of complete recovery by 18 months. Overall, the sequence of ADT and radiation had no effect on full testosterone recovery. Furthermore, the kinetics of testosterone recovery had no effect on the risk of biochemical recurrence. Predictors of longer time to recovery were older age, diabetes, and lower baseline testosterone. Compare all of this to the HERO trial, where men on the novel oral GnRH antagonist relugolix had an average testosterone of approximately 10 nanomoles per liter just 3 months after stopping ADT. The bottom line is, it takes on average 1 year to achieve full testosterone recovery after short course combined ADT with a non-steroidal antiandrogen and an LHRH agonist, a lag that doesn't appear to influence the risk of prostate cancer recurrence. Up second, stops short. Leptomeningeal disease is a particularly devastating diagnosis, not only because of the neurologic deficits at stake, but also due to the difficulty of safely and adequately treating it in its entirety with current drugs or conventional radiation. So what if craniospinal irradiation, CSI, could be delivered more safely? Now that's a holy grail opportunity for proton investors everywhere, because there's actually a really good potential clinical benefit to harnessing the stopping power of the often hyped Bragg peak anterior to the entire length of the CNS. Here's a promising single-arm phase 1 trial of 20 evaluable patients with leptomeningeal disease from solid tumors who all received proton CSI with 30 gray in 10 fractions. All patients had to have plans for further systemic therapy, which is a pretty great surrogate for having a good performance status. Patients also had to have sufficient blood counts. All systemic therapy outside of endocrine and HER2-targeted agents were held 1 week before and during treatment. The primary endpoint was dose-limiting events defined as grade 3-plus non-heme or grade 4-plus heme toxicity within 4 weeks of CSI. This level of toxicity was seen in only 2 out of 20 patients who experienced some combination of grade 4 lymphopenia, grade 4 thrombocytopenia, and grade 3 fatigue, all of which resolved without intervention. More exciting is that 2/3 of patients remained without CNS progression at 6 months, and 1/5 a whopping 12 months. Median time alive without CNS progression was 7 months, and median overall survival was 8 months. While the latter is not a duration typically to be celebrated, it's notably more than double that achieved in a phase 2 trial reported this month evaluating pembrolizumab monotherapy for leptomeningeal disease in an almost identical cohort of 20 patients. The bottom line is, proton CSI delivered in just 10 fractions appears to be a safe and quite promising palliative treatment for leptomeningeal disease, thanks to Yang and Brasianos in Neuro-Oncology and Nature Medicine 2020. Up next, paradoxical regression. With the rise in the use of total neoadjuvant therapy and wait-and-watch approaches for rectal cancer, should we use a higher-than-normal dose for the boost? Rectal Boost was a pragmatic, randomized phase 2 trial where patients with locally advanced rectal cancer received standard neoadjuvant chemo radiation plus or minus a 3 gray times 5 for a total of 15 gray boost prior to the start of treatment. The trial sought to determine if dose escalation improved the rates of pathologic complete response and sustained clinical response compared to standard treatment. Patients had tumors within 10 centimeters of the anorectal junction with clinical stage T4 or T3 within 1 millimeter of the mesorectal fascia, or N2 disease, or extra mesorectal lymph node metastases being present. Everyone received standard 2 gray times 25 fractions for a total of 50 gray with concurrent capecitabine plus or minus the boost to the MRI-delineated primary tumor with margin. Finally, a 12-week interval between radiation completion and surgery was standardly used. Among over 120 patients enrolled, the combined rate of either path CR or 2-year sustained clinical response was the same in both arms, 36 to 37%. Despite a significantly higher rate of near complete tumor regression with dose escalation at 69% compared to just 45% with standard therapy, again, there was no increase in path CR rates. A similar finding was also seen in the INTERACT trial. The bottom line is, adding a dose-escalated boost to standard chemoradiation for locally advanced rectal cancer results in greater tumor regression, but no increase in the rate of pathologic complete response. Thanks to Cohenberg, Red Journal, 2020. Up next, paradoxical progression. Did you know there's a subset of non-small cell lung cancer that finds immune checkpoint inhibition to be its fertilizer of choice? Hyperprogressive disease is a term coined in the literature for this phenomenon of increased tumor growth upon administration of immune checkpoint inhibition. But a clear consensus definition is still lacking. This French retrospective study, as published in JAMA Oncology 2020 by Koss et al., looked at 406 patients receiving immune checkpoint inhibition for non-small cell lung cancer, and it aims to remedy the lack of standard definition. Among 5 proposed definitions for hyperprogressive disease, the winning one, so deemed by proving most correlated with survival and most distinguishable from plain old progressive disease, was a change in tumor growth rate pre- and post-ICI. To be exact, monthly tumor volume increase during ICI therapy must be 50% higher than the monthly increase before treatment. Shockingly, this was the case in 14% of the patients examined. The bottom line is, immune checkpoint inhibition is an amazing advancement in the treatment of non-small cell lung cancer, but for cases where it isn't helping, it may actually be harming more than we realize. Up next, a skin win. This week, the FDA approved pembrolizumab as the second PD-1 inhibitor on the market for the systemic treatment of advanced cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma deemed incurable by surgery or radiation alone. This comes nearly 2 years after cemiplimab garnered headlines for the same success. This approval is thanks to early reporting of KEYNOTE-629, a single-arm, multi-institutional study that demonstrated an objective response rate of 34% with the use of standard pembrolizumab dosing of 200 mg IV every 3 weeks until progression. While this isn't quite as good as that reported with cemiplimab at 50%, at least physicians are already familiar with the side effects. The bottom line is, Pembro is now the second PD-1 inhibitor FDA approved for the treatment of advanced cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma. Up next, quality assurance. Recent data indicates a broad but small absolute advantage of less than 5% in rates of disease-free survival when regional nodal irradiation is employed for certain higher-risk breast cancers. How might this be affected in the real world when contours and plans don't necessarily pass a third-party review? This retrospective look by Ling et al. In Practical Radiation Oncology 2020 evaluated 161 women receiving RNI within the University of Pittsburgh system, and it aims to determine dosimetric quality as measured against trial standards. In the end, 18% had absent or unacceptable nodal contours, 15% didn't achieve adequate nodal target volume coverage, and 9% had a lung V20 that was greater than 35%. Additionally, 3% had a mean heart dose that was greater than 4 gray. The bottom line is, optimizing outcomes with regional nodal irradiation likely calls for peer review. Finally, negative Nancy. She'll be the first to tell you she's not the only one. This extremely detailed serologic study of 74 patients with active COVID-19 in China, half of which were symptomatic and half of which were not, demonstrates a disheartening median duration of viral shedding of 19 days among even the asymptomatic, with an interquartile range of 15 to 26 days. More disheartening is that 40% of asymptomatic and 13% of symptomatic patients became seronegative for tested IgG antibodies by 8 weeks. Thanks to Long, Nature Medicine, 2020. This concludes today's episode of The Quad Shot. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and subscribing to our podcast. Also, check out our website at www.quadshotnews.com and subscribe to our newsletter. We'll catch you next time.